Today, a bigger, more taxed, less housed Australia incoming. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. So now we know Labor is headed into a landslide result from the election after Liberal votes fell away and the opposition leader Peter Dutton lost his seat. If the numbers hold through to the end of the count, it will be the highest two-party preferred vote since World War II, exceeding the 55.7% Liberal leader Malcolm Fraser that he achieved in 1975. So, was this a vote against something or a vote for something? Well, probably a bit of both, as it turned out. Australians overwhelmingly preferred Labor's version of the future and rejected that of the Liberals and of Dutton himself, which was frankly negative and disorganised. When the campaign started, what looked more like a bunch of ill-disciplined amateurs was up against seasoned professionals. The Liberals' condemnation of Labor debt and reckless spending didn't stop it from following suit, even raising the deficit over the next 2 years. Its promise of tax reform was laughable, frankly. Its policies on defence and housing were too little too late to even register in the fog of the campaign. And nuclear was a dud, even if the cost was uncertain. Actually, there are also some parallels with the recent Canadian election, where ex-central banker chief Mark Carney ran to victory last Monday, running as the candidate best equipped to defend Canada's sovereignty against Donald Trump, although he emerged with a minority government. As a veteran central banker who helped establish stability amid first the 2008 financial crisis, then Brexit, Carney's argument to Canadians was that he was the consumerate fixer. "I am most useful in a crisis," he said on the campaign trail. "I'm not that good at peacetime." It was an argument that convinced many voters who gambled that what the country needed was a safe pair of hands. While Trump figured prominently in the early days of the federal election to Carney's benefit, many of the issues that previously fueled growing support for the Conservatives over there are likely to bubble back to the surface in the coming months. Housing remains unaffordable, the cost of living crisis hasn't yet abated, and wage growth feels stagnant for young workers. A somewhat chastened Conservative Party actually had their leader lost their own seat. Sounds familiar, huh? So back in Australia, where the crutching victory over the coalition lands at least 14 seats from the opposition and Greens, including Peter Dutton's electorate of Dixon, it leaves Labor well positioned to win actually a third term at the next election. The scope of Labor's victory means the number of seats required to win next time seems insurmountable rather than just extremely difficult this time. Labor becomes the first party of government to expand its majority at its second election, and Albanese is the first full-term Prime Minister to be elected for a second term since John Howard back in 1998. Albanese attributed his victory in part to the negative impact of Donald Trump on Conservative politics. "In this time of global uncertainty, Australians have chosen optimism and determination," he said. Dutton said, "It was not our night, and there are good members and candidates who've lost their seats, their ambition, and I'm sorry for that. We have an amazing party and we will rebuild." This was a stronger victory for Albo than the polls suggested, while Liberals blamed the loss on a mixture of a terrible campaign, poor policy development, the nuclear energy push, the influence of Donald Trump, and Dutton's personal unpopularity. Treasurer Jim Chalmers attributed Labor's recovery to Albanese's performance on the campaign trail and the way that we got back in the game on the cost of living. "The economy became a positive rather than a negative. I think the interest rate cut was part of the story." Greens leader Adam Bandt faces a nervous wait after being pushed to preferences in his seat of Melbourne. But the Greens will still have the whip hand in the Senate after all six senators who were up for election this time were returned, and the overall result in the upper house will take weeks to shake out. Ahead, the Liberal Party has no credible alternative to Peter Dutton, nor a policy platform that can fly, as seats across Tasmania and Brisbane in particular turned red. Unless they broaden their appeal, especially in the outer suburban areas, supposedly full of tradies keen to protect their petrol-powered utes and jobs from inner suburban elites, well, they're cooked. As for Labour, they appear to stand for an even bigger Australia, so expect more migration. They won't touch negative gearing and CGT and have all but promised home prices will continue to rise despite the promise to build more homes. Ongoing household support, where taxpayer funds are redirected to electricity rebates and other cost of living supports, will push debt higher unless new taxes are found or rates are raised. Renters will continue to feel the pressure the most, with nothing on the table to really move that dial. Labour should do gas reservation policy akin to what the LNP proposal was. It was actually their best policy by far, but Labour probably won't do so. That means that energy costs will remain high and probably go higher. The RBA may cut rates, helping to ease some pressure on households, but inflation is still looking sticky, so there is limited opportunity there. And the plan to hit superannuation accounts worth more than $3 million, including taxing unrealised gains, is, well, back in play. Actually, if Albanese and Jim Chalmers want to chase more revenue, such as through cracking down on trusts or other super tax concessions in numerical terms, there's little that can be done to stop them. The idea that you can tax something that does not exist is as illogical as it is dangerous, as was the first term industrial relations reforms that damaged flexibility and productivity. Actually, Chalmers has said their first term had mainly been about fighting inflation. Our second term will focus more heavily on productivity without forgetting inflation, he said. But actually, there was zero policy I could see on productivity revealed through the campaign. That said, with Labour almost now certain to win another term after this one, such is the drubbing the coalition received, Albanese and Chalmers suddenly does have the chance to drive the sort of real Hawke-Keating reform that both men love to refer to. Commonwealth Bank Chief Executive Matt Comyn last year acknowledged that the very worst time to advocate for big change was typically during a noise-filled election campaign, but perhaps not long after that, we need to really be collectively trying to make a bit of this case for the sort of reforms that would be supportive of economic growth and improvement to living standards for all Australians, he said. Truth is, without big change not reflected in this campaign, all Australians will pay for government largesse with little on offer beyond more spending to meet the country's urgent challenges. Remember that Labour's emphatic victory came despite, frankly, some pretty average budget management, and debt and deficits do not just magically go away, and the government needs to be serious about addressing them. The stage is Labour's, but don't hold your breath for the reform that Australia really needs. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.